them to do it.
We're continuing our discussions with discount rate. Aida is going to explain to us where this is all going to end.
Not easy and not soon, Hans.
Is it going to end?
Nothing ever ends the standard setting, does it? So.
Okay. So not for cynicism.
Good afternoon. So, yeah, we have another paper discussing the detailed feedback on a specific project from agenda consultation. This time it's discount rates, agenda paper 17. So in this paper, we are not asking you to make any decisions. We don't have any questions for you. But anything you say will be used against you. No, what I meant is everything you say we will use in developing the next paper, which will be on decisions on the next step for this project. So I really welcome your input and suggestions you may have today. So just a little bit about the feedback in numbers. So over half of comment letter respondents specifically commented on discount rates research. And one quarter of all respondents thought this was a project of high importance. Another quarter thought this was a project of medium importance. And we had about 10 respondents that have specifically rated this project as of low importance. So that leaves us about another quarter or a bit higher who did not rate the project at all. So if we look at just the numbers in the context of feedback on all research papers which you discussed yesterday in April's paper, I think this puts discount rates just about in the middle of them all. But as you noted already, not everything is about the numbers. And just a little bit on comparing to 2011 agenda consultation, the level of response and the support for the project we found to be pretty consistent with what we had in 2011. I would say the only difference this time around was that there was a little bit more flavor, a little bit more detail behind the comments in the comment letters. Although I have to say it wasn't clear to us that many of these commentators actually were aware of the research work done so far and aware that the board has had discussion of the preliminary findings over the last few months. There were only a few comment letters that specifically made reference to this. So we just looked a little bit at the feedback by types of stakeholders and by regions, and we found some interesting trends in both, so I'm just going to highlight these quickly. So in terms of feedback by stakeholder types, it was interesting that the project was almost unanimously supported by standard setters and regulators. But having said that, there were two notable exceptions, which were IOSCO and the Japanese standard setter, which did not rate the project very highly. In terms of standard setters, the main reason they quoted for supporting this project was the argument of consistency and consistency being needed to have high quality standards. In terms of regulators, they mainly focus on the practical implementation difficulties we see today, and also some of the emerging issues and methodologies, needing for more clarity in methodologies. We found this project also quite well supported by investors. Although we had 12 comment letters from investors, and three of those specifically rated this project being as of high importance. But also, in addition, looking at the online survey, over half of the investors who responded to online survey thought this project was an important project. And investors gave a range of views for supporting their rating of this project as being important, and this included some of the practical issues they found that they thought were inconsistent or simply wrong requirements in some of the methodology detail in the standard. Some of them explicitly said they thought that discount rates in some standards today could effectively be manipulated, and there were also investors who emphasized the need for consistency and emphasized the quality. On the other end of the spectrum,
Explain a little bit? So you say there was a lot of support among regulators, except IOSCO did not express any interest.
IOSCO thought that in their comments letter, they said they thought the ISB should focus its effort on the areas where more guidance was needed.
But IOSCO is the organization of all standards, all regulators. So how can regulators be supported but not IOSCO?
Well, ESMA, for example, is not a member of IOSCO, and ESMA was very supportive of this project.
Well, but all ESMA members are a member of IOSCO.
Well, this is a paradox, and it is something, if you wish us to go back, we can go back and explore to them, but I'm simply, based on reading the comment letters, ESMA comment letters said
one
thing.
And also individual regulators were also in support.
So what we found is that there were no individual regulators that were IOSCO members that would have sent a separate comment letter. So these other regulators who sent comment letters supporting the projects were not those who were IOSCO members, put it that way.
So are they prudential regulators? What kind of regulators were they?
Okay, well, so now you're putting me on the spot, Mary. Can I get back to you on that one?
It's not a big deal, but it's just if you say all regulators except IOSCO. ESMA is the only one I can think of that's a market regulator that's not a member of IOSCO. So it then makes me think, well, is it a different type of regulator?
I think we bundled all regulators in one, but I don't have on top of my head now list of names of regulators who responded.
I can imagine for prudential regulators.
So yeah, the regulators were a bit, but I know.
Okay.
So looking at other stakeholders, we thought repairers were the category that didn't really give great support to the project. And this is not because many of them said the project was low importance. I think there were only two repairers who explicitly rated it as low, but almost 70% of repairers did not rate it at all, which in itself is indication. And finally, auditors, interestingly, were so split in their views, you know, between six of them or whatever was the total number we had of the comment letters, they pretty much expressed any possible view on this project, which I thought was quite interesting. And also, looking at the regions, there were some trends. So if you look at New Zealand, Australia, and also South America, there was a very, very significant support for the project, I would say overwhelming. But then Europe, North America had a good, provided the kind of, I would say, quite high support. But Asia was, in general, there was very little support for the project. We didn't have a single comment letter from Asia which rated this project as of high importance. And none of the stakeholders from TAC's home country rated this project as important at all. It was explicitly low rated by Japanese stakeholders. And I think in Japan, the main view expressed was that there was really no problems to be working on. They didn't think there were issues in this area. So that is the regions and stakeholders, and just maybe to finish off by highlighting some of the comments on the scope. I say scope, this is not really scope, we have already done some initial research, it's more suggestions for next steps perhaps. And I think in terms of comments on scope on this project, and I don't know if this was case for the others, but we really got every possible suggestion I could think of was mentioned by someone. So the range of suggestions was from doing nothing more on this project, and this is either because, like in the case of Japanese respondents, that they thought there were no issues, there was no need to do any further work, or people who thought the work was worthwhile, but they didn't think the discount rate was the right vehicle, and they would suggest that instead the work should be done individual projects. You know, ICE 19, ICE 37 were mentioned, and there were also several letters which talked about linking with conceptual framework, and even one of the auditors suggesting that this really should be picked up in the work on conceptual framework, and the work done so far should be used in developing and finalizing the measurement section of the conceptual framework. So this is on the kind of do nothing more on this type of comments. Then there were a range of comments which suggested do more, but not direct standard setting. And this included suggestions to basically use the work done so far or do a bit more work to develop internal guidance that would assist board in future standard setting in this area. And I also have seen specific suggestions to develop a practice statement on present value measurement, similar to like we have on materiality or management commentary. And then final bucket was suggestions that were for standard setting work. And I have to say, many of people who suggested standard setting work suggested that it should also be divided in two streams. So there were people talking about doing short-term work on fixing individual standards, and there was lots of talk about emerging issues as well, such as low and negative interest rates, and then doing a longer stream of basically developing comprehensive guidance or a standard on present value measurement. So I think whatever you decide, you know, you will be responsive to someone. So that is one positive aspect of this. But with that, I'm going to stop and just see what you have to say, how you react to this.
Can I add some comments on a couple of things? One is to remind you what is meant, or what respondents are probably talking about when they say this project. And secondly, to remind you where we are in the cycle on this one. So when they say this project, they probably mean do something about discount rates. They're probably not very specific about what it is, but they're probably talking about standard setting activity of some kind, of some scope, whatever it is. That was a message we got in 2011. It's a message we got in 2015 as well. But as Aida says, I think we probably do know whether they've seen the staff research. Almost certainly most of them haven't looked at the papers, and there's no particular reason why they should have done. So the information's been available, but it's unlikely to have, we're sure, I think it hasn't influenced the results. So not surprisingly, they've basically repeated the things they said in 2011. Where we are in the process is that the board has had a run through of the staff's findings so far. What would we need to do next? Well, first of all, there are a couple of loose ends from those previous discussions, and I think there's an open question about how much further we take that. Some of it would be relatively narrow scope, some of it would be a bit bigger. So there's some work to be done there, possibly a bit more. I think we've got an open question about how best to capture and summarise the staff's findings to make sure it's made available to the public in the most useful way, and whether that's a discussion paper or in some other format is an open question. I think we have an open question about whether the board wants to get a bit more involved in some of the work that was already done, and that question also depends to some extent on how we document the findings so far. You know, clearly if the board wants to put out a more formal document, I think it's more likely you might want to go back and revisit some of that discussion. So when we say people are giving comments on the priority of the project, they're not really giving comments on the priority of the research work. The research work is largely done. I think we're sort of close to the wrap-up stage for the work that's been done, and we're leading on to the next stage. So I think it's worth bearing that context in mind.
Well, that's a lot of questions. Gary.
Actually, Peter touched on a lot of the points I was going to make, but I think the research work that he had taken us through a few months ago in a couple of sessions, you know, when I started, before we started, and I kept thinking, discount rates seem to be all over the place, but the work you took us through, they subject by subject, when they were defined in the study, they actually made sense. You know, different assets or different liabilities, you're measuring for different purposes. So it would seem to me that if the standard is clear, how you determine the discount rate, I can see where the preparers and perhaps the auditors come from. There isn't a problem in practice because the standard, whether it's IAS 19, IFRS 9, IFRS 16, in insurance, it tells you how to do it. So there's no clarity needed. And if you read the basis of conclusions and stuff, it gives you basically the essential logic why that's the discount rate. So I don't know what we would do with an overarching project on this thing. Maybe answer some of the older standards that are sort of unclear, ambiguous, what do we mean by discounting, and so on. But I think if the standards themselves are clear, eliminates the need for standards project, but it doesn't mean you don't need education to explain why. You know, there are different rates for different purposes, but I'm not so sure you need it for many of our standards, because it's clear.
Except that I think that Aida struck upon some glaring excesses in discounting.
Well,
for example, a
company that has massive future decommissioning liabilities that that discounts them with a discount rate, including the risk of their going bankrupt, which would
They didn't say you didn't have to do any work, you know, but whether it's own credit, whether it's stuff that's really not well addressed in our standards, if it's older or silent, well, maybe. But I think a lot of the recent standards, they're pretty clear on what the discount rate is. And I think you're reopening more fundamental aspects of some of those projects than just what the discount rate is.
But the example that I just gave, is that despite a clear standard, or does the standard allow for this?
Well, there are. I think this is the case of standard perhaps could benefit from being more clear, and then it will be harder to do these things. This is IS 37 we are talking about, and the rate, what it includes.
Mary?
The overall message I took from this feedback is there may be some things to be done, but my sense is almost picking off a few things rather than it really, you know, rather than it really pushing me over the line in terms of a cross-cutting, overarching, conceptual project on discount rates. In terms of the feedback here, some of the things I noted include the one that Hans just recognizes, that they highlight that there are a couple standards where there's lack of clarity or consistency about the, you know, about the objective for something like own credit in IS 37, which is why Joan was talking. If we were, you know, that's something that could be done as part of even a smaller scale project. That's one possibility. I think the point you made, Aida, about a strand I saw flowing through a number of these was a desire for more help on the how-to front, you know, whether you call it education material, practice statement, that several of the comments seem to be, we want more guidance on mechanics rather than concept. And that's maybe something we could peel off and think about whether that's an education priority or not. And another thing that I took out of it is there's some frustration from users about the number of variations. I mean, if we struggle to remember, in this standard, is it risk-free or risk-adjusted? You know, can you think about users who aren't accountants trying to remember this as they use the financial statement? So maybe there's one overarching message for us about think hard before you create another variant, you know, in a standard-setting context. But and so we maybe need to have more discipline. The one thing I think I would ask you to follow up and maybe bring us some information back when we make priority decisions in May is in paragraph 30, the two users who you said is providing feedback, you know, to me are very significant voices, the FA Institute and Eumedion. And when I look at the comments that they offered here, I think one is a specific comment about the structure of IS-19. So I take it out of the discount rate debate. Breadth of impact is why they're talking about why discount rates matter, and I think they do matter, and we have to remember that in standard setting projects, but it didn't say to me, do a project. And the inconsistencies, I think, may be more something we can deal with by going in and looking at it, but that's me making suppositions from appropriately summarized information here. I'd maybe ask you to go back and just look again at the two comment letters to make sure we're not missing any nuances that we should be considering in priorities, because these are serious players in terms of user needs for financial statements, and think hard about issues, and it's not just we want.
I mean, the point A that they make, paragraph 30A, is what, you know, Hans was just discussing.
Yeah.
Is one example of that.
But it's an example that I think doesn't automatically say, therefore, we must do an overarching project on discount rates. It may say, maybe we should go back and look at some of these inconsistencies or lack of clarity and fix them on an individual standard basis. You know, that 38 doesn't automatically say, do an overarching discount rate project.
Yeah,
I agree. Yes. Thank you. I don't see in the graph at the bottom
whether or not there was any input from the actuarial profession here?
Well, we have International Actuarial Association that responded.
Okay.
And, you know, they have been very interested player from the very start and been very involved in this project. But they are the only actuaries that we have.
The reason I mentioned, yeah, is because, you know, based on my prior experience, I know the American Academy of Actuaries, which is a component of that group you just mentioned, has done a lot of work in this area. There have been standards and there have been position papers written over the years on topics related to this. And I'm just curious as to how much of that would be leverageable in our discussions. The one thing that does give me pause in this area for not necessarily taking it to the next level are some of the points in paragraph 30, and in particular this whole specter of low and negative interest rates for, you know, an indefinite period of time, and how does an insurance company, how does a pension plan deal with that scenario, you know, indefinitely? And I think that could be a very narrow issue that we, you know, embrace or tackle. It's one that I think, frankly, people are just going to keep coming back to us and asking us the question. So you may want to continue to do your research in that area in anticipation of that, but that's just something I throw out there to be aware of the environment in which you're dealing with, because that, you know, it wasn't even talked about going back a couple months ago, and then, you know, Chairman Yellen mentions it in terms of, you know, stress testing in one of her reports, caught everybody off guard. So I think it's something that we should at least have a perspective on, not necessarily today, but
yeah,
Monday would be fine.
Philippe,
yeah, it's about the same issue of negative interest rates. That was not very important or very prevalent at the time we launched the consultation. But looking at the current situation, for instance, with the negative rates up to 8 years, the German T-bonds, the German government bonds are negative up to 8 years maturity. If you take a 2 or 3 years maturity, it's a significantly negative, it's materially negative. So how does that impact conceptually the idea of discounting? And in practice, is there an application issue which is growing? We can hope it will disappear soon, but I will not bet that we'll get rid of that in the very short term. So how do we do discounting when you have negative interest rates for long periods?
Well, you upcount, no? You upcount instead of discount.
Okay, well, does it make sense conceptually? That's of course, the answer is simple. Do the mathematics, apply the negative rates. So you have a bigger liability than you would have otherwise. But conceptually, does it make sense? This is a question I ask.
On practical level, it already impacts methodology people apply. So some preparers have recently told us that they have stopped adjusting risk through discount rates, because even if you have a low positive rate, adding risk to it would make it negative, so they do cash flow adjustments. But of course, now with more and more bonds or, you know, themselves going into negative territory, you end up having your
even corporate bonds, high quality, go in negative territory today.
I had originally excluded this from the scope of the project because the remit you gave me was to look at IFRS standards and compare the requirements there with consistency and inconsistency, and this didn't fall naturally into it. But clearly, it's a topic that keeps being brought up, and if anybody is going to look at it, this project seems to be the place.
The interpretation committee already got some questions about negative rates, but in a different environment for different questions. But I will be surprised if we will not get more and more questions on this topic.
I could say my case would be seeing the opposite side, high interest rates. It's unfortunate, but that's it.
Well, Brazil has achieved what the whole Western world is trying to achieve. nice inflation rate.
And yet
everybody is unhappy. I don't get it.
It's actually, no, it's just, of course, a piece of just to show that how to manage expectations in such a diverse world of IFRS users. I think you answer one or comment on one point that I had. What was exactly the scope of this project? And to me, it was exactly the one you mentioned, the inconsistency in our literature with regards to discount rate. And my sense, and I will mention most countries in Latin America, one point that they insist is of course, they are in a different interest rate environment, but is the lack of long-term rates, for instance, interest rates. And when discounting pension funds and eventually some products that are long-term and they do not. So I think there is an expectation that more guidance would be needed in terms of mechanics or methodology or whatever. So it's mostly how to deal with in this changing but diverse environment as well. I think this could have an impact. And what would be the outcome in that? So much more aligned to an education type. I don't see this as a practice statement as well, because would be distinct to other practice statement, because if we are talking about inconsistency in literature and also providing some, if we fulfill the expectation, providing more guidance in comment on methodology, things like that, whether I'm in a negative interest rate environment, whether I'm in a high interest rate environment, whether I have the data for long-term discounting long-term assets and liabilities, things like that.
By the way, with this issue of negative interest rates and how it could impact accounting, would probably be a very good topic for me to bring to the financial stability board.
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because we can pretend that this is a short-term issue, but it's probably not going to be such. And I think it would be good for me to bring it to the people who are causing this. And show them and show them what the consequences are. And you know, and the thing is, I am not sure that if we just follow the economic logic and do with negative interests, simply the mirror image of positive interest rates, it probably shows truly the economic havoc that it creates.
Right.
So I think it would be, apart from, you know, the deeper conceptual things that we have to do, but I think it would be good for me to bring this to the...
some modeling on one sample balance sheet, do some modeling and show them.
Yeah, so let me take this offline with the staff, but I think we need to do something. Sue.
Thanks for this paper. It was interesting, especially seeing who was saying what. I was surprised by the people who rated it as low, but also interested in what the investors had to say. I think this is a good opportunity for us to see whether we can be quite efficient in terms of maximising sort of what we can get out of all of the work that you've already done so far, because I don't think it would take a heck of a lot more work in terms of wrapping up the piece that we've already done, which is what Peter was alluding to. But mainly what we've got you to do so far, if my memory serves me well, Ada, is to sort of document what is happening today, what the differences are, why some of the differences exist, etc. I wonder whether one of the things we should think about would be, if you look at that, then you can see, for example, that we have some differences because sometimes we're more clear about what the measurement objective is or more specific than in other cases. And obviously, it would be good practice for us to be more clear or to be clear in our measurement objectives going forward. And I know we sort of got stuck a little bit on tax, but there would be another area where maybe if we could say something about what's good practice there, what's good practice on things like double counting. I just wonder whether there's some things that wouldn't be a lot of extra work above and beyond what you've already found, but if we were to articulate them in a way that sort of gave a steer on what was good practice.
Do you mean like recommendations for the board for going
sort of for us for the future? Yeah. What it might be able to do, and it's just a suggestion in terms of the most efficient way to move forward, would be then to have a look and see how many of the concerns raised would we be able to actually tick off, because I think a lot of them are really asking us to be more consistent, more principles-based, more clear, etc., which I think is our intent anyway, and maybe we could take some takeaways from what we've found works well or otherwise in our standards already to give us a steer in that direction. So we might be able to use the documentation process of the work that you've already done to already achieve a few of the objectives of what people are looking for and the feedback that they've given us. So it's just a thought, just off the cuff, of a way to maybe think a little bit creatively about the analysis we do in terms of what the next steps might be and how we might use resources best in response to the feedback that we've got.
Great work.
Now, to a large extent, my view is very similar to what Sue just said. You know, at the beginning, I think 2-3 years ago, the staff suggest the project, you know, can be divided into three parts or three stages. The first stage is to explore whether there is an inconsistency or some areas is not so clear enough. And the second part is how is the practice? Sometimes maybe the standard is not so clear, or even the standard not consistent. But in practice, there's no problem because they already form some kind of general accepted practice. You don't worry too much, and we have to explore. I think up to now, AIDA has done quite a good job, particularly on the first part, frankly speaking. You know, the areas there's inconsistency or the unclear. But I would prefer to do a little bit more about the second part, that is, you know, how about the reality, you know, because sometimes people say that, you know, I don't care. It's because we already, as I say, have a general practice or some other reasons. And then based on these two parts, I will strongly suggest to document in a way, in some way, whether it's called a discussion paper or research paper, we can discuss later on. But it seems, you know, not documented, not so good, we waste effort, you know. I feel the findings from AIDA's research is quite good. So my first suggestion is to finalize a documentation, and with some, a little more effort by the staff and about more board members. And as to the next step, whether we should do something to improve the standards, I think there are different ways we can ask questions, maybe later on when we finalize the document and the board can discuss whether, you know, we would like to ask our constituency what kind of, you know, standard level or other kind of effort we should take. I don't agree with do something at the conceptual level. You know, we will finish the concept framework project up to that time. And I also don't think a practice statement is appropriate. It's because the major problems in this area is inconsistency in the standards and unclearness in the standards. And this is nothing to do with prepare how to apply the standards. Of course, in some areas, maybe more guidance is necessary. So I will think more in between, you know, the do something in relation to particular standards or some kind of internal documents, you know, to guide our board members how to make decisions, very similar to something we discussed last several months or last year. Should we have something guide ourselves about transition arrangement? I think we just run into chaos. So many versions, and people may not fully understand the logic behind. So in summary, I would suggest to document after a few more jobs, and then to think about whether we want to ask questions to next.
I mean, if I can just interject, I mean, this is not a decision-making session, but I've heard enough arguments in support of the internal guide, that it almost seems like no-brainer that no matter what we do, this is something that would be a good outcome of this project. I just wanted to ask Sue, would what Vago was just discussing about documenting the findings, would that be compatible with suggestions you had in mind, or were you thinking this step is not necessary perhaps and we can simply just go into this stage of developing internal documents, we don't need to publish or document externally what we have.
I was thinking of an external document when I was talking about documentation.
Okay.
I think we do need to document it in some form that's visible to the outside world, because they've now said to us twice that they're interested in this area, so I think we need to give them some feedback on what we've found.
What people have asked.
That's where I meant as well.
I
think Sue and Wagner have said a lot of what I was going to say. I think I just then add on an extra element to it, because I do think it is firstly critical that we do put out something, given both the fact that we've done a lot of work and we've been asked to do it, but also because I think in some ways the discussions we've had have raised some issues, and I think we need to tie up those issues. But what it does illustrate is that in thinking about the decisions we're going to be making at the next meeting, what becomes important is not just understanding do something or do nothing, because for many of the projects that are already on our agenda, even do nothing is going to require a certain amount of effort and consume a certain amount of resources. And I think what would be very useful in going into then the next session would just be a sort of a rough understanding of what do nothing really implies, just so we can understand just how big a deal that is going to be from a resource perspective.
Wrap up what we've done.
And think, yes.
Decommission.
Thank you. Aida pointed out Japanese constituents are not so interested, including ASBJ. The reason is simply Japan suffered no interest for nearly 20 years. They are not very much interested in it.
They have no interest.
Yeah. However, just recently, ASBJ issued implementation guidance, which is for Japanese GAAP, about negative interest, because actually new government bond was negative interest. And the Japanese pension accounting requires explicitly that you have to use the most recent Japanese government bond interest rate. So therefore, they have to use negative interest for the estimation of pension liability. The question was whether or not it should be limited to zero, or can we use the negative to that so that increase the liability. And what the ASBJ did is allow the option. You can use either way, but negative.
But a difficult choice.
Having said that, you know, negative interest is a conceptually very difficult issue, because the negative interest means the value of the money today is less than the value tomorrow.
That's right.
Yep.
Yeah, so that, but the question is, such kind of transaction, would it happen within private people?
Yes, people buy government
bonds. It's happening, however, if you are only as a person.
Also, this is exactly what the central bankers are trying to achieve.
Yes, exactly. That is exactly the point.
Want people to act upon the knowledge that if they don't spend today, they will have less tomorrow.
That is the point. Actually, this can happen only between government and central bank. So between the government and central bank, it can happen and force it to the private world.
No, because there's already a question about negative interest rates on deposits for customers.
Yes.
Positive customers. But the point is, but if it goes beyond the margin of service margin, if it happens at actual negative interest in the private world, what is the meaning of that? Maybe it could be interpreted as a different way of imposing tax, or a different way of subsidizing some economy. So the phenomena of negative interest is really difficult to understand. So therefore, we have to really look at it. However, having said that, this is a different project to the
this project. Actually, this project is talking about how do we collate the negative interest within standards, including the risk margin or a tax element or something.
Discount rate within standards. How do we collate the discount rate within standards?
Oh, yeah. Sorry, discount rate. Yeah. So this is the essence of the project. So issue of negative interest rate contains a lot of conceptual issue. It should be treated a little bit separate from this
not
project.
So sure. I think it's all based on the same economics. Economics of positive interest rates.
Now you mentioned it, Zach. I had very interesting conversation with another Japanese colleague, Yuji, about this, and because we were looking at ASBJ pronouncement and saying whether that would work, but I guess your Japanese people haven't talked to Swiss people who have started imposing penalties to people holding excess cash, which effectively means the floor is not zero, because in theory, what is to stop them if rates are minus 10%, what is to stop them imposing 10% penalty on the cash, which means there is no zero because you can't even hold cash unless you're going to keep it in mattress, but you won't keep it in mattress because you need to hire guards and securities, and that's probably cost the loads. So it's a quite
not
interesting...
In Japan, that's a pretty safe country.
So it's interesting. Interesting topic to explore.
Okay. Central Bank of Europe has decided to withdraw the 500 euros banknotes to avoid them being stuffed in mattresses.
Should all invest in the betting industry.
Okay.
Withdraw them for security. It's just